Cape Talk. Cape Talk. A world view from London.
Good morning, John. Welcome back. How are you this morning?
Oh, good morning. Not too bad at all, actually. It's another nice day here.
Oh, nice. I'm glad to hear it. Wait, John. I play this game quite a bit with Adam. What's your maximum temperature today in your summer?
What's my what, sorry?
Your expected maximum temperature for the day.
Oh, I think we probably had it last week, actually. I reckon 30 Celsius.
Okay, that's impressive. Okay, cool. All right, we had 26 impressive. Yesterday
that,
in the middle of winter.
Very often.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
right?
You've beaten me then.
let's talk about...
I can't compete with that.
Let's talk a little bit about COVID test centres. 2,000 new centres are going to be established. Is this in the UK now?
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the new COVID curse, really, isn't it? The pingdemic. It's another new word for the dictionary, I reckon. And what's happening is thousands of, you know, very important workers are self-isolating because they've been pinged by the COVID app on your phone. So that means you're a close contact of someone testing positive. And of course, with colleagues at work, it could easily be the case that bucket loads of staff suddenly stuck at home because all their phones ping, and then suddenly there's nobody to drive the delivery lorries around. And actually, you know, to be fair, I've seen myself some near empty supermarket shelves as a result of all this disruption, and it's also affecting frontline police and fire services, border force staff and other essential workers. So, well, the answer is, what do you do about it? Well, if you have daily testing, you know, if you go and have a test in the morning and you're negative, then you can go straight to work. You don't have to self-isolate at home.
That's
and
right.
To make that happen, the government... Yeah, it's having to step up the number of test centres that it has. So 2,000, they're not all up and running yet. There's some question marks about how long it's going to take them to actually get into gear and get all these up and running. Because it's one thing to announce it, isn't it? It's another thing to make it happen. But they hope to have 2,000 test centres around the country soon to help deal with that. The other thing, by the way, to mention this morning, it's pretty positive news, although it's got some scientists scratching their heads because they didn't actually expect this. We're not knocking it. It's great news. COVID cases, daily cases, have gone down for the sixth day running, just under 25,000 new cases in the latest figures, down from nearly 47,000 a week ago. But what's it down to? I mean, let's hope it's all good news and it's not a blip. But, you know, I think cautiously optimistic is the word. But the government says, even though the figures are going down, don't let your guard down. You know, we're not out of the woods yet.
John, tell me something. Are these tests at the test centres, or are the test centres expected to provide free daily tests? Because it becomes quite costly, right?
Quite costly. It's something that the taxpayer is going to have to shoulder the bill for at some point, you know. But yeah, that's right. But they're only for designated critical or essential workers in these specific industries. So it's not open to everyone, but it's certainly open to a much wider range of workers than it was before, just because the government can see that, you know, this self-isolation business where you have to self-isolate for 10 days is just meaning that businesses literally can't function because half their staff are at home.
It's very cool when a country works. I'm so jealous. Let's turn our attention to France. The defense treaty with France. What in the world is that all about?
Yeah, this is quite interesting, actually. It's a new... I mean, the UK and the France obviously have got decades of... centuries of good relations. But this is a specific treaty, a security treaty, which they signed in Paris to combat possible terrorist attacks on cross-channel ferries and to deal with this threat swiftly and effectively. I didn't know it was a known threat, but I suppose everything's a threat these days, isn't it? There is a sort of a suspicion from some people that is it really more about having an agreement to tackle the large number of illegal migrants that cross the channel in these flimsy, overcrowded, dangerous boats? That's a long-standing problem that the two countries have got. But no, we're told this is specifically about dealing with terrorism threats. And I thought it was an example, actually, of the close relationships between the UK and France, because both of the countries' defence and foreign secretaries met to talk about the treaty and to talk about other things that the two countries work together on. And who'd have thought it? A really long list: European security in Africa, joint work on China, Russia, Iran, Afghanistan, and the Indo-Pacific. Wow. So I think a big push there to show that the two countries are getting on quite well, even though there have been some frosty relationships between Britain and France, specifically over Brexit.
Yeah, that's really impressive. The thing that's still taking me aback at this particular point is the idea of terrorism on the English Channel. Mm. Haven't people swum across it? It seems such a small space, but interesting stuff. The oldest
stain. It's such a busy waterway.
I see.
I think it's, they say it's one of the world's busiest waterways, even though it's such a small stretch of water.
Right. Okay. Canterbury Cathedral. Very valuable for many reasons, but now also as now being proven the world's oldest, the holder of the world's oldest stained glass windows.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a softy for Canterbury Cathedral because I studied at university in Canterbury, and I always went out of my way to walk through the cathedral grounds and go through the cathedral, and it never failed to stop me and take my breath away because it's just such a magnificent sight. And these stained glass windows, which I've looked up at on many occasions, who'd have thought it? I mean, everyone knew they were very, very, very old, but you can add a few more verys in front of that. They think that these windows might go back to the 11th century. And, you know, we're talking about new words for the dictionary. Here's another one,
right.
A windowlizer. It's a new bit of technology. It looks very unprepossessing. It almost looks like the gun that police hold up to see if you're exceeding the speed limit. It's not a very impressive bit of kit, but what it actually does is extremely impressive. It radiates at the glass. It doesn't damage it, but apparently it gets through to the glass's chemical footprint, and they can then assess the age. And they reckon that some of these stained glass windows go back to the middle of the 12th century, the time when Archbishop Thomas Becket was murdered in the cathedral. And it's really a very exciting find. I should say, one of the world's oldest stained glass windows, just for the record, apparently the world's oldest stained glass window is thought to be at a cathedral in Augsburg in Germany. But I tell you what, they haven't put the window lizer to that to that cathedral in Germany yet, so they can't have bragging rights yet.
To that.
But a very exciting find in Canterbury Cathedral.
That's fantastic. That's really awesome stuff. Thank you so much, John Adderley, giving us the worldview from London.